You know, we obviously talk about ghosts on this show, but do ghosts ever talk about us amongst themselves? On a recent EPP bonus episode titled Dead or Alive, we hear the story of spirits who gather in a little boy's room and seem to discuss the family and the home they inhabit.
You won't forget this one.
It's a one-of-a-kind ghost story, and you're only going to hear it in our EPP bonus section. Sign up to be an EPP. It's only $5 a month. You keep the wind in the sails of the show. You keep it afloat. You keep it on the air with all the free episodes, and you get access to more than 50 bonus episodes, exclusive video content, and so much more. Please sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com, and let's keep Real Ghost Stories Online on the air.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a young boy is confused when the shadow person he sees in his kitchen appears to bend down to hug him. A funeral is attended by those wishing to pay their respects, but a little girl notices a few more beings in attendance. And a premonition of a terrible flood was made even more horrific when the scenes appear on the news. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to these stories. It's always disturbing when someone like has a dream of something and then it comes true.
I know, when it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times you just kind of, do you ever have that where you have like a real scary dream about something? I mean, I have it like where it's not even like remotely involving myself, but it's like I'm watching the news and something horrible happens or something, you know, is going on. And then you're like, you wake up like, oh God, thank God that wasn't real.
Yeah.
Do you ever then fear like, well, what is that like? Is that a premonition? Is that a sign that was really way too real?
No, I don't ever think my dreams are premonitions just because they are so off the wall all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no way that's going to happen.
Have you ever had one that's remotely come true? I mean, not just like a desire, but like a, you know, these actions played out then and they were completely beyond your control.
Yes, but it was not like accurate on the details. It was just the general theme. Like if I woke up and I wrote down the general theme of the dream, then, you know, a couple weeks later, if I went back, I'm like, oh, that happened. But the details of who and when and where and mm-hmm. how were all off.
So kind of a general theme.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that can happen.
Yeah.
That's because I think that's more so like you're almost foretelling in your mind, you know, how things may play out.
Yeah.
But it is spooky. I've never had it actually happen.
No.
But obviously there's some people who have.
Yes.
So we'll get to one of those stories in just a little bit here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, our phone number 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. We would love to hear it. All right, let's kick off the show today. We will go to one of our letters to start things off. And our first letter today, it comes to us from Sean. Sean writes in, all right, I've been doing tons of research and story hunting, especially on one of your past shows on shadow people, because when I was 6 years old and 11 years old, I had a shadow people experience. Obviously, the closest people to me know my story, but I've never been on the website sharing this story because of possible ridicule. But after I listened to your past program, I feel that this needs to be told so other people like myself can be assured that they are not seeing things. My first experience occurred when I was 6 years old, living with my parents on the northern tip of Maine in a small town on the border of Canada called Fort Kent. Now, both these shadow people experiences did not occur with any type of sleep paralysis. I was awake and alert both times. I was six, and my brother and I, who was 4 years older than me, asked my father if we could sleep on the couch in the living room. We asked because it was summertime, and there had been a huge thunderstorm earlier in the evening, and our house was old, so the upstairs always was so super humid and uncomfortable. My father agreed, but I asked him if he could sleep in the adjacent dining room because I was scared to be downstairs without him there. My brother was with me, but I was still scared. Fast forward several hours, I woke up in the night. The skies had cleared because I remember seeing a lot of moonlight up areas in the house quite a bit. The way my brother and I were sleeping on the couch was we had our feet together. His head was at the end of the couch that faced the living room window, pointing out the front yard, and my head was pointing at the kitchen. After I woke up, I noticed a dark, very dark figure standing at the kitchen sink, looking out the window above the sink that faces the backyard. I could see very clearly because of the moonlight showing through all the windows. When I focused more, I noticed that it looked like smoke slowly billowing from the side of the figure's head. This made me immediately think that it was my mother because she was a smoker. So at that moment of realization, I said, "Mom?" This thing did not respond. I also remember thinking it was female because the outline of the head reminded me of a woman with long hair. After, it didn't respond. I remember blinking really hard to make sure I wasn't seeing things. After doing that and still seeing this, I remember getting goosebumps on the back of my neck. Before then, and to this day, I've never been this full of fear to where I got goosebumps like this. I was fully awake, alert, and scared. I know I didn't hallucinate this. Anyway, after it didn't respond to me saying, "Mom," I then called out, "Dad." Once again, I did not make a response. It's so clear that I even remember my thoughts going through my head after I had called out for my dad. I said to myself, why did I say dad? Because a huge part of me thought it was female and smoking a cigarette, or I thought it was a cigarette. Once again, it did not respond, so I called out, "Matante?"
Matante.
Matante?
That's French for my aunt.
Oh, you miss how many years of French?
Four, but that was okay. 15 years ago, so.
That's true.
There you go.
I had like that half semester in junior high. I don't remember any of it. Okay, so matante?
Mm-hmm.
Matante is a French way of saying my aunt. Oh, and that's what it says right after that.
Okay. Yeah.
Fort Kent is a very French-speaking town and grew up in a family that spoke French more than English. After I said matante, it slowly turned around. Very slowly, it was turning around. It opened its arms very wide and bent down slowly. I compare the stance it was taking as how one adult would if a small child was running to them, and bending down and opening its arms to give them a big hug. I know it didn't want a hug, though. Still, I could not make out any defining parts of this figure except for the fact that it had very small red eyes glowing. Other than that, this figure was darkness. At that moment, my body went into flight mode. This figure was approximately 15 to 20 feet away from my position on the couch. I know my brother couldn't see it because he was facing the opposite direction. Also, I did not notice any sort of reaction from this, so I knew he was still asleep. I was contemplating on jumping off the couch and hightailing it up the stairway. It was 10 feet to my right. Our house and three rooms, dining, living, and kitchen rooms were in a circle. The only thing separating them was our stairway that was directly in the center of the house. I remember thinking, will I have enough time to get off the couch, get to the stairway, and escape upstairs to where I knew my mother was? My father was supposed to be in the dining room and did not want to give this figure any more time to get to me. All this happened in under 60 seconds. With his figure standing there without after it returned to face me, I also thought, what if I ran up the stairs and this figure would run at me from around the dining room side, grasp my legs through the stairway banister? So I went for it, jumped off the couch, made it to the stairway. As I ran up the stairway, I used all four limbs, my arms and legs, to get me up the stairs as fast as possible. I made it to my parents' bedroom and realized my father was in bed with my mother. He must have gone up there once my brother and I were asleep. I woke both of them up yelling, there's someone downstairs. It's in the house. So my father ran downstairs, turned on all the lights, made his way to the kitchen, where he left a pistol in a drawer to the right of the sink. He began slowly and carefully checking every nook and cranny of the downstairs. All the doors were locked. He made his way to the basement. This whole time I was following him. As we got to the basement, he checked the doorway that opened up to the backyard, but this was also locked. We did not find anything. I'm 30 years old now, and to this day I cannot explain these events. I remember it so vividly and can still relive it perfectly through my memories. We moved out a year after this incident because my parents split up, my father moved to Connecticut, and my brother and I stayed with my mother. After my mother and father split up, my mother's alcoholism landed my brother and I into several foster homes from 7 years old to 11 years old. My brother and I got separated when I was 10 because he destroyed many gravestones at a cemetery near our foster home. The DHS decided to move my brother to a group home 10 miles out of town, and from that point to now, we've barely been able to keep contact. I was alone for the first time in my life when I was 11. I was moved to my new foster home that would finally adopt me when I was 14. After I had moved into this home, my second encounter of a shadow person occurred. My bedroom was on the second floor. In my bedroom, there was a huge 6x6 antique mirror. Then, and even to this day, I cannot try falling asleep with my back facing everything. Always make sure I can scan the room until I fall asleep. On this particular night, I started dozing off finally and decided it was okay to turn around and face the wall because I knew that I was about to fall asleep. But after I turned, facing the wall, I heard something. I compare this noise to a pencil being dropped onto my dresser, which sits directly beneath the mirror. I immediately spun around, and as I did, there was a dark, shadowy outline of this person's head. Again, I could not make out any details, but I knew it was a head, because it resembled an outline of a head. Again, I immediately knew if it had any details, it would be a person's head. It wasn't my mind playing tricks, because I've always been afraid of the dark, so I'd leave the hall light on. This lit up my room very bright. Was clear, I know what I saw. I didn't waste any time. I jumped out of my bed, sprinting to my foster parents' room. I just saw someone in my mirror. So my foster father, after being pissed off because I woke him, decided to get up and go to my room. Just before, when I was 6 years old, could not identify anything in my room. From that day to the day we sold that mirror in the garage sale, I kept a huge bed sheet completely covering this mirror. Since that night when I was 11, I have not witnessed anything paranormal. I would love to keep it that way.
I think that's my favorite shadow person story.
Really?
I think so.
How so? Why?
Because the shadow person was smoking.
Okay.
And I thought that was interesting. And then the way that when he called out, thinking it was his aunt, that it turned and bent down like, yeah, right, I'm your aunt. Come here and give me a hug. It was just really kind of funny.
Do you think that the shadow person had good intent or ill intent with inviting the hug?
I think the hug was to scare him off. I don't know why. I get the feeling it was to scare him off. Maybe it's because it was a shadow person with red eyes, and I just don't really relate those to being the ones
good
that are okay. Those are more the ones that aren't okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was just, I'm sure it was horrific to go through and terrifying, but I just kind of found some humor in it, the way it was like, yeah, come give me a hug.
Yeah, you've never really had a shadow person do that.
No, it was really different.
Very interesting action for a shadow person to undertake, because that's not very typical of what we hear with them. But good story.
Yeah.
Definitely a very good one. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Our next letter. I enjoy your show and have been an EPP for a few weeks. Wanted to tell you a story of my mom. A couple years ago, she had a stroke and suddenly found herself in a nursing home, and I found myself to suddenly be a caretaker. Over the years, she had her problems in the home, and I always tried to have her back. Because of the stroke, she didn't always understand issues that concerned her, but I took care of things for her and always told her that I have your back. She also got confused about my late father who died years ago. My mom was only 56 and I was 25. It had been just the two of us for years. Before her stroke, she always joked that because I worked at a newspaper that I would probably end up having to work when she died. After some very bad setbacks, I decided to follow her advance directive and to begin end-of-life care. This was at Christmas time. One night, a few days after Christmas, I got a call while I was at work and was told that my mom had died. I'd visited her every day that week, knowing that the end was near. My editor let a coworker take me to the nursing home so I could say goodbye. I ended up coming back to work to finish my shift. It was better than going home alone. I mentioned to a friend that mom was right and that I did indeed have to work when she died. On my way home that night, I got the most wonderful feeling. I felt like I was in a warm cocoon and got a feeling of great joy. I almost felt like singing and giggling. The feeling only lasted a few moments and then it faded. I've heard of visitations when a loved one dies, and I think this might have been one. I went home that night certain that mom had crossed over and had come to say goodbye first. I also felt for some reason that dad came and helped her cross over. I still think back to that night and can still recall the wonderful feeling. I'm really glad she didn't show herself in the windshield while I was driving home that night, though.
Yeah, that would be bad. I think it's good that she came and kind of gave you that one last positive feeling so that you didn't feel bad for not being there at the exact moment she passed away, even though you were there almost all the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's a huge thing. If, you know, you're not able to be there when somebody passes away, that you kind of, you feel bad about that, mm-hmm. even if you were there virtually 24/7.
Sure.
And I almost wonder if that was her way, the mother's way of coming and saying, you know, we're all good.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. And see, you had to work.
Yes, exactly.
That's cute. That's a good story. Thank you for sharing that one with us. 855-853-4802. Our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Kelsey writes in, my great-grandparents died within a short time of each other. They've been together for most of their lives. My grandma didn't even have a driver's license. At the last funeral of the two, my cousin, who was very young, maybe four, got in trouble because, one, she kept asking her mom who those two people were standing there and why they were dressed funny. And two, she kept complaining that the angels that were there kept stomping her feet. We thought she was a child using her imagination to fight boredom and didn't really pay much attention. Later, while looking over old photographs, there was one of my grandparents when they were young. My cousin was there and pointed her finger and said, Mommy, those are the people that were there. That's them. Why are they dressed so funny? Since the photos were old, their clothes were dated and I guess looked funny to someone who didn't understand. No one else saw anything, but my cousin was so adamant and spoke of all of this without any prompting. So we take comfort knowing that our loved ones are finally back together, potentially in the presence of some foot-stomping angels. Very interesting, the foot-stomping angels part of that story. What does that mean? You don't really hear of that, and you have to take it at the word of the child. If they were accurate on seeing the loved ones that had passed on that were there and dead, then I would imagine to say that they were probably pretty accurate on seeing the angels as well. And I wonder what the angels looked like. You'd figure if a child is identifying an angel, it would be your typical angel look, wings, white, and such. But no, you have to wonder. You really have to wonder. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Our next letter comes into us from Miranda. Miranda writes in, greetings from Brazil. I love the show. My name is Miranda, and I live in the coast of the northeastern area of Brazil. I've been a long-time listener, but only recently became an EPP. My city has a long history of haunting and supernatural culture. It's very similar to New Orleans in that regard. So-called skeptics are a lot more open to supernatural things than the usual. Well, the story I'm going to tell actually happened with a friend of mine in college. She has prophetic dreams all the time and throughout all of her life. And she confided in me around February of 2010 after a terrible night of stressful sleep about a dream she had had the previous night. In this dream, a lot of water was rushing through the streets, housings, and packed hospitals. She said there was a feeling of despair, but not for herself. She was just an observer in the dream. As is with her other premonition dreams, she didn't even have a body. In the dream, many people were trying to seek refuge in an old church because of the violent water that kept rising and rising. Plantations and farms were lost, cows drawn cows drowned, people lost everything they had. So I have to explain that my state has two seasons, summer from November to April, and winter from May to October. The summers are hell, hot and humid. Winters are hell, hot and rainy. Back to my story. Jump to June that same year. The rains are disastrous. I watch the news and I see that the towns and villages closest to the green area of the state where farms and cows herding are the main way of life are suffering with nonstop rain. The nearby river is rising. And in a specific small town called Palmares, a bridge that connects it to other municipalities is destroyed by the waters. There's no way of help from the military to get there. Nowhere to land helicopters or a rescue team. The river is so violent it drags actual small buildings. Their people lose their homes, their crops, their animals. The hospitals are packed, people are in despair, and family members are missing. Through it all, the government declares a state of emergency for the entire region. We hear in the news about people seeking refuge in the only church in town. As the waters calm down and lowers, it turns out one of the only buildings that survives the flood is the church. 20 people died, the entire population lost their houses, and there's no food until the next crop. In the weeks that the news coverage is happening, I meet my friend on the campus and show her a picture taken from a helicopter of the church in Palmares, and she is shocked. It's the same church from her dream. I love things about the supernatural, and I think there's a lot of things left to be explained. I myself wouldn't want to see ghosts or anything like that. I'm like you, Tony. I'd freak out. But I believe and respect whatever is out there. Sorry if it got so long. I have other stories that happened to this friend, my family, and myself, one including Macumba. It's a religion here, very similar to voodoo or Santeria. Hope we'll hear Tony reading this with a creepy voice and all in the air. Best wishes for you and Jenny. Miranda, P.S. about EPP36 and acupuncture working for allergies. Tony, I have the exact same problem as you do, and this kind of acupuncture is not with needles. It's with glasses and fire on your back, close to where your lungs are. The heat shock helps with it, but even after 30-plus sessions, I still had the allergies and cough of death. The only thing that helped me was working on strengthening my immune system by taking fish oil every day in the morning. I know it's yucky, but yes, it worked. It's an old type of medicine, but effective. P.P.S., will you guys be my BBF? No, I'm kidding. And there's links to the flood that she sent.
I would not want to see the future.
No, that's probably not something that I want to have on my to-do list.
No.
Or my wish list.
And I can have terrible anxiety at times. I mean, mm-hmm. I have general anxiety all the time, but sometimes it gets really bad. And I think that knowing how the future is going to be is not going to help it.
Probably not.
I think the what ifs are the lesser of the two evils here.
Because you just know the impending doom or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You'd be able to pick out the bad parts and then just focus on them.
Yes.
And then you wouldn't be able to really enjoy the good parts. Because when you're having a good part, you're focusing on the next bad part that's coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Interesting story. I would not want to have cups and fire on my chest either.
There was an episode of Anthony Bourdain, one of his shows, mm-hmm. where they did that.
Yeah.
You remember seeing that? And it leaves like suction cup marks where it looks like...
It's like welts.
It looks like a huge octopus got a hold of you.
Yeah. Not something that I think would be very fun.
No.
Plus, I'm very flammable. I have a lot of chest hair, and I would go up like a Bee Gee on fire.
Oh, God.
I would. And I would probably sound like one as well. Suddenly you hear this, like, oh, my God, is someone playing Barry Gibb records? No, it's just Tony. His chest hair is set ablaze.
That's more than our listeners ever needed to know.
Let you know. Just filling you in. No secrets here. 855-853-4802. Is the phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us or suggestion for allergic reactions to animals and the like. Let's go over to a caller here and get the story. Hi.
I just heard an episode from July 20th. You were talking about somebody that had a residual haunting of her grandma. That was so creepy, but it made me think of something when my father passed away, and he died when I was in high school, and it was myself and my younger brother, who was 5 at the time. I was 17, and he died suddenly of a heart attack in the house. And my mom and one of my aunts had gone to church, and I was home with my brother, and we were cooking and getting ready for the family that was going to come over, since he literally just passed away a couple of days before. And I was in the kitchen cooking. My brother was in the other room watching TV, and I didn't even notice it, but he came in the kitchen and he said, "Who's upstairs?" And I thought, oh my goodness, I've heard my father getting ready, getting dressed for his day. We lived in a really old house, and right above the kitchen and a portion of the living room where my brother was sitting watching TV was their bedroom. The master bedroom was humongous in this house. And he was up there watching, you know, or getting ready for his daily activity of whatever he was going to do. I actually thought about it and realized I heard him, I think, get up from the bed, sit in his recliner, get up, go in the closet. You could actually hear the sounds of the way the closet was built, of clothes coming off of hooks and hangers and the belt coming off the belt rack and the shower turning on. I mean, obviously not all in that order, but that was what was going on. And I realized when my brother came in the room, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, it's something. So I grabbed him, I turned off everything that we were cooking, and I went outside and sat in my car waiting for my mom to get home, half expecting our dad to come outside and go about his activities. So I just wanted to share that with you. I'm pretty sure it was residual, but it was so creepy. I love your show so much. Thank you for listening.
Interesting occurrence. And it makes you wonder, when you have a situation like that where someone just died, and then you hear them essentially going through their regular routine, mm-hmm. How do you take it? Do you take it as they're doing that to give you a sign, or do you take it as it's just energy replaying? Should it be a sign that they're okay on the other side, or is it energy that's replaying itself? And then why would that energy not replay itself just if the person went on a trip and they weren't in that house? Lots of questions.
There are lots of questions, and I don't know that I have an answer for any of them.
Mm-hmm.
My worry, or not worry, but my question is it a residual haunting if it only happens once? Say, you know, it's right after the father passed away, maybe for a couple of days they hear it, so maybe twice, mm-hmm. and then they don't hear it anymore after a certain amount of time. Does it have to repeat, you know, indefinitely for it to be a residual haunting, or can it be, like you said, just the energy is still there and going,
mm-hmm.
for it to be a residual haunting?
I think it may. I don't know what the exact definition would be on that. My guess would be something to the effect of it needs to repeat itself at least twice.
Okay.
Almost identically, for it to then be residual, because if it's not repeating itself, it's not residual. I mean, you could make the argument that it is just left over, but is that really residual if it's just doing it one time? You can make the argument that, you know, that it may seem like it's residual, but it could be conscious. You don't know.
Yeah.
You get much more into the argument or the discussion of, well, maybe this isn't conscious when it's exact same repeated methodical actions.
Okay. Because I was just wondering, with it being leftover energy,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost like somebody doesn't realize they're dead. But
sure.
It's not that. It's just the leftover cycle.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's an interesting topic that no one will know the answer to ever. But there you go. That's all you can really do is just kind of talk about it, discuss it, share the stories, and see if you know, if you can figure out the answer to it. The reality is, you know, it's all opinion, and that's all it is. We can just kind of base our, you know, guesses and opinions on past stories and the experiences of what we've heard here on the show. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. Let's go over to, I think, Tony in Pennsylvania is on the line here with a call at 855-853-4802. Yes.
Yes, the Brewski family. I hope this message finds you well and in good spirits. My name is Tony, and I live in Pennsylvania. The story I'm about to tell you actually took place less than 48 hours ago, so it's still fresh in my mind. Little backstory. I had spent some time in the service, and I spent some time with the gentleman with me in the service, and unfortunately, he had seen some things and he had done some things, and, you know, he confined them to me, and we became really good friends even after I had left the service, and he remained in the service. He got out, he was very troubled after he got out. He got a lot of PTSD and couldn't really find a way to cope with it, and unfortunately he did end up taking his own life, and it was very sad, very traumatic. I remember being at his funeral. It was a troubled time for everyone, because no one expects that from a loved one. Anyway, just recently my wife and I had become, well, now my wife, we're newlyweds, and I think that's what triggered this event to happen. We had just come back from spending some time on a vacation, and my wife had come upstairs and gone to bed before me, and when I had come up, I mean, you know when your spouse is dead asleep, I come into the room and start putting my phone and my wallet down and getting ready to call the day. And I happen to glance over, and my wife is sitting straight up in bed, turns and looks at me, and with the exact words says, "I'm so happy for you. Please tell Stephanie I love her and I would love some cookies." She sometimes does say weird things in her sleep, and most people really wouldn't think too much about it, but immediately it scared the life out of me, because the gentleman I was in the service with, his wife's name was Stephanie, and she would always bake us cookies and send them to us wherever we were deployed, Iraq or Afghanistan. So we got a little taste from home, you know, because of his loved one would always send us these cookies, and her name was Stephanie. And this scared me tremendously, and I had walked over to the bathroom to get a drink and process what had just happened. There's no way in my mind that this could have been a coincidence, because it was perfect without skipping a beat. You know, wasn't like a stutter or anything like people might have if they were talking in their sleep or anything. This was absolutely perfect. And she looked at me dead straight in the eye, which I thought was strange. And then after she had said it, she just rolled over, went back to bed, and nothing. And I had talked to her about it the next morning, and she doesn't remember doing it. She doesn't remember having any bad dreams or anything. But as she did state that as she was falling asleep, she did feel like uncomfortable, not scared or that creepy feeling you get when you think someone's watching you. She just couldn't explain it. She just felt uncomfortable. and she had just chalked it up to, you know, the stress of getting married and, you know, we're purchasing a home. So she just thought it had something to do with that. So she didn't think much about it. And then this event happened, and I informed her about it. It was very different. It was very scary on my part. I myself am a skeptic. But, I mean, after that, I mean, you can't really be a skeptic after something like that happens to you. So, I'm looking at the situation from a different perspective, and I can't find another reason for it. My wife had never met, you know, this soldier I was with or her wife, so they don't know each other's names or anything, and there's no way she could have known names or anything, so it's different. it's still fresh in my mind, so I'll be thinking about that for a few days, but I really enjoy the show, and thank you, continue the great work.
I would make the same assumption that it's the friend that he lost coming through the wife in her sleep.
Yeah, I would think that. It's a funny, honey, I'm not feeling quite right. It might be one of those nights where your dead war buddy shows up and possesses me.
It's sweet, though, the message that
it is.
Left.
It is. It really is. I mean, I would venture to guess that would be exactly what it is. It's kind of creepy to think that he can kind of take over someone like that in their sleep just to deliver a quick message and then go away, but I guess there's things that you understand you can do when you're dead that we don't quite grasp here yet.
Yeah, and, you know, it might have been less scary to do it that way than to show up.
Sure.
In whatever state he was when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think it got the message through definitely, and that was the point.
And maybe it's not necessarily like a full-blown, like, possession or anything like that. Maybe it's one of those things where the dead know that they can use some tools. They can put a message into someone's mind, get them awake enough to say something and do it. But they're not like, it's not like a puppeteering. It's more manipulation, if you will. I don't know. But creepy, but interesting. And it's good to hear. You know, I mean, if you can accept it for as bizarre and creepy as it is, it's a nice message from a dead friend.
Yeah.
So very, very interesting story. Thank you for calling in and sharing that so soon after that that occurred. Of course, our phone number here is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. We're always open to hearing them. And be sure to press that subscribe button, whatever platform it is you listen to us on, so you don't miss any episodes of our show. And I should mention this, too, because we now have more ways to become EPPs. It used to be for about a good portion of the first year was PayPal only. And PayPal is still an option if you're already subscribing via that and it's working for you. No need to do anything. You're all good. It will keep working. But there's now options for folks who don't want to use PayPal. You can sign up without having to do PayPal. And you can still use a credit card in that. And you can do it anywhere in the world.
Okay.
We got that all set up, too, where it's not just the United States. Anywhere in the world. There's, like, I think one country that maybe has never listened to our show, but they probably don't have internet either. But basically, if you can access the show, very likely you can sign up to become an EPP using your credit card with or without PayPal. It's up to you on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. $5 USD a month is all it is. So check that out and help keep our show on the air. Let's go to another caller. Hi.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jenny. It's Hope from St. Paul again. Just listening to, again, an older episode. Still playing catch up. And, you know, talking about how Jenny had the ghost imaginary friend when she was younger, and the girl who had the imaginary friend who started out nice and then started to tell her to, like, burn the house down and whatever. And I'm thinking back to my childhood, and I realize, I guess I did have a ghost imaginary friend, but I never considered him my imaginary friend. I always knew he was a ghost. At times I could see him, at times I couldn't. His name was Danny. Oh, I called him Danny. His name was Daniel. And he was, I'm assuming from his clothes from, like, Frontier days, you know, looked kind of like cowboyish, that era. But just thinking about it, how, like, I'm, as I've said before, I'm very sensitive. I would very used to paranormal, which is why I never even considered him an imaginary friend. But also, I never talked about him because, you know, he wasn't my imaginary friend. I didn't exactly want to tell my super religious ghost don't exist parents that I had a ghost friend. But basically, he was with me for most of my childhood, from about 5 years old and up until college 2 years ago. But basically, he would protect me from negative spirits and warn me from interacting with them. The one time I didn't listen to him, I've written about it, so I'm not going to reiterate the story, but the one time I didn't listen to him and ticked off a negative spirit that I was just sick of him messing with me, bad things happened. But yeah, I just kind of found it interesting. It's like hearing about other people, you know, their imaginary friends, and I'm like, I always knew he was a ghost. And I don't know, maybe that's just weird, maybe it's just me, I was kind of a weird child. But anyway, yeah, I love the show, keep it up. I am an EPP, playing catch up on that as well. Kind of playing catch up everywhere. I'm trying to watch or trying to listen to every episode. But yeah, keep up the great work. Love the show, and I hope to hear this on the air at some point. All right, bye.
Would it have made you more comfortable or less comfortable to realize as a child that your imaginary friend was a ghost?
I don't know.
Like, I wonder what it, because kids are so, you know, open to ideas that otherwise would be looked at as adults by, oh my God, that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's no reference point, it could very well be a very normal thing if you don't have a reference point of that's not normal. It's like, oh, ghosts, okay, I guess we get to see those and play with those too, you know?
I don't know that I would have been afraid, but I can't say that, you know, that I wouldn't.
Sure.
I think it probably happened the best way possible for me to not even realize it was a ghost until
sure.
sitting here in this chair talking to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a good question. I bet you there's more kids than we realize that have ghosts as imaginary friends and they don't even realize that they're ghosts.
I think that's very common.
Yeah.
I think that is super, super common. Interesting story. Thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us. Phone number 855-853-4802. Hi.
Hey, Tony and Jenny. This is Elle from Chicago calling. I called in to tell you guys an experience I had about 2 years back when I went to visit my grandparents in Missouri. I've always liked to go jogging very early in the morning. So I went out for a morning jog, and it was kind of a creepy, foggy morning. And I come across this tree. It's just your typical, creepy, old, gnarled, scary movie tree. And as I get within about 10 feet of this tree, I felt like someone had punched me in the gut with grief. Just, I felt completely heartbroken and hopeless, and I just kind of stumbled to the trunk of this tree and sat down, and just for about 10 minutes just bawled my eyes out. It was the worst I've ever felt emotionally, and I don't have any children, so I can't say for sure, but it was almost like how a parent would feel losing a child, just complete, utter hopelessness and heartbreak. And after about 10 minutes, felt like a lot longer, I was able to pull myself together and start walking home. And when I got to my grandparents' house, they were obviously really concerned about me because I have this huge puffy red face from crying. And I just said, I don't know what happened. I can't explain it. I came across that old creepy tree and just started crying. And they both kind of looked at each other and proceeded to tell me that this tree actually has a really dark history. It was the KKK's favorite hanging tree in the area. So just dozens of black slaves have been hung from that tree. And I'm a firm believer that that kind of evil and just terror kind of just leaves a mark on the physical land around it, and I can only assume that that is what I stumbled upon. And Yeah, that's my story. Maybe sometime I will call in with my experience I had at Alcatraz. And I just wanted to say that if anybody out there is on the fence about becoming an EPP, it is totally worth it. Recommend it 100%. I hope you guys have a great night. Bye.
Thank you for the words of encouragement there on our EPP. Of course, it is what helps keep our show on the air, and thank you for being one. Interesting experience there.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm shocked
or
surprised. That seems like a very normal reaction to have.
I'm just sitting here wondering if there's something with trees. Maybe it's because of...
They're living?
Well, maybe it's because they're living. Maybe it's because, you know, any tree this size enough to hold a body or hang somebody from has to be pretty old.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have quite a few stories that involve trees and hauntings with trees.
Sure.
I'm just trying to wonder about that.
I could see it being something that can hold energy better than other things.
Yeah.
Just the fact that it is a living something, you know, and that may encompass energy more. What's more disturbing is when you come across an area or an object or something and you have that just horrible foreboding, and in this case, you know, overwhelming feeling of sadness. And you don't know why it is, and no one has any explanation for you.
Yeah.
That's even scarier, because then you're like, what happened here?
Yeah.
And if there's no one able to answer that question, that could linger even longer in your mind and I think be even more disturbing. I mean, it's disturbing as to what it was to begin with. I mean, to hear that story, but at least she got an answer as to why she was feeling that way.
Yes.
I think it'd be even scarier just to walk by something and have, you know, what should otherwise not be making you feel a certain way, making you feel a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, that could be very, very disturbing. Thank you for calling in and sharing that experience with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Time for about one more call here before we wrap up the show today. 855-853-4802, of course, the number to dial in. All right. And let's hear your story at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name is Crystal. I'm calling from Montana. I called back a few weeks ago, and my story was I had moved back from Florida, and we lived in a haunted house and all that. But I was just thinking about another one. I have a good friend here who just recently moved out of a house that he was renting with his daughters. And he used to tell me just how his daughters would get really nervous, and that they wouldn't stay in their two separate rooms. They had to stay together, and they wouldn't go in this one bathroom, and all these little stories, you know. And we talk, and I told him my experiences living in Florida, and it was really interesting. So we were there a few weeks back for a barbecue, and he had a few of his relatives there, and one was this little boy about 4 years old. And we were all sitting downstairs, and the little boy comes down the stairs, and he's just laughing away. And he goes, his mom was there, and she goes, "What are you laughing at?" And I don't remember the little boy's name. And he goes, "Oh, Auntie," I think he said Auntie Mimi's upstairs. And he just keeps laughing and looking up at the stairs. And I look over at my friend, and he looks at me, and his eyes just get huge. And so the little boy ends up going outside, and we start talking. And his Auntie Mimi had died a few years back. I guess it was kind of, he was too young to even know her. Like I said, I think he was about four, and she died a few years ago. So he must have been, what, two when she died? So I just thought that was really odd, but everybody was a little freaked out. They all knew that there were weird things happening in that house. And for this little boy who doesn't know any better to just start laughing and be staring up at the stairs like there's something up there, it was pretty different to see. Just thought I'd share that. But all I have, I wanted to tell you guys too that I just love this podcast. It just kind of seems like everybody loves each other and everybody really enjoys each other. And I like hearing everybody and their take on things. I find it really interesting. All of this is really interesting. And some of it I get a little teary on, and some of it I get a little freaked out on. And it helps me through my work day every day. So thank you. Keep up what you're doing.
Okay. Do you think she gets freaked out more so on ghosts or when I reference lighting my chest hair on fire? Which one do you think is more freaky to our average listener?
Chest hair on fire.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that scares me.
Even worse than like zombie ghost clown?
I don't know.
Right up there?
I don't know. Now people have this mental image of a Bee Gee doing the show.
I do. I sometimes dress up in like the outfit from Saturday Night Fever.
Do not.
The big white one. And our floor here is actually light up.
Right.
Like the disco floor. I used to, I loved the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack when I was a kid, and I was playing radio station in my mother's, in the living room.
Uh-huh.
And so I'd play radio station, and then at night I'd open it up into a nightclub in the living room for me and my cat.
Okay.
And I'd put the Twister mat out there.
Oh, sure.
And the Twister mat was the pretend disco floor.
That works.
I always wanted to have a disco floor.
Wow.
We should do one here. This is a raised area of floor.
Is an elevated floor, and we're not going to do that.
Come on, it would fit the motif so well.
No, we put too much work into making this the way it is.
Ghosts and disco.
Not going to move.
What could be better? That wraps up today's episode. If you like the show, please support and help keep us on the air. Sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person, on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. That's what keeps the show going. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.